So when you do that, when you're at the top echelons of those spheres, you will bring about dominion. You will bring about what they call the kingdom of God on earth. So essentially, that's their political strategy. And Trump is a tool to get there, you see, to make that happen, because he listens to them. You see, Trump and them had this kind of transactional relationship during his mandate. Like, he listened to their grievances and he tried to meet and satisfy his promises towards them, but he relied on their support, on their voting support. So that's how it works. And people that are in their way, people that don't agree with that kind of mandate, are often sidetracked or sidelined, or they are delegitimized as political adversaries, where they start using language of spiritual warfare, demonizing political adversaries and enemies as being influenced under the powers of evil forces. So that's how it plays out. It's a kind of rhetorical strategy to polarize people and force people to choose.
That was Concordia University professor Andre Gagne speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, everybody. It's Greg McVicker, creator of Undercurrents. Glad you're listening. This is KBOO 90.7, Portland.
Tune in to KBOO throughout February, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for Black History Future Month, our special programming series in celebration of Black heritage. This series aims to celebrate all aspects of the Black lived experience, from contemporary, political, and social issues to understanding how history impacts our present. Again, that's Black History Future Month, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. throughout the month of February, where you will hear interviews from Black creatives, artists, activists, revolutionaries, KBOO hosts, musicians, and more, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I'm Grace Gooding, Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KBOO, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KBOO.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. I'm here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Becca Rothstein and Dana Zenkraff. Dana, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did. Yes, you did. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, would you start by just telling our listeners what your current work positions are and if you hold any additional union positions? You're both located in Montgomery County, Maryland, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we are.
So talk about what you do and, maybe how you got into teaching.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, first of all. I feel very privileged to be able to be speaking with you today, especially considering I'm pretty new to this union work. I'm not new to being a union member. I've been a special education teacher in Maryland. I work primarily with elementary school kids, fifth graders. For 18 years. So I've been a union member for 18 years, but I'm fairly new to learning the ins and outs of the union and learning about how much power that unions have and how we can help use our voices as union members to help our unions use that power, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I love my job. Everybody always, when they hear I'm a special education teacher, they're always like, oh, but really, I feel privileged to be able to work with my students. And I hope to continue this union work because they are members of the working class also. So thanks again for having me.
Hi, thank you for having me as well. I am a middle school math teacher. I've been teaching for 10 years. I'm also a union member that whole time. And this year I actually have the unique opportunity to take leave for a year and actually work with my local union as a member organizer. So that has really opened my eyes to, like Dana said, how much power we really have as a union. And, you know, all the different strategies we can take moving forward to, you know, get a lot of good trouble in. So, and I really got interested in teaching and union work mostly because, like you all, I want to change the world for the better, and empowering our youth with the truth is the best way to do that.
Great. Thanks. Well, we wanted to have you on the show today to talk about what's been happening with your union around Palestine and calls for a ceasefire, as well as the broader organizing across the country.
So our local union has not taken a firm stance on anything going on with Palestine. We are working towards getting an NBI presented at an RA, but that has been a challenge. But they sent out a message, you know, October 8th or something like that, and it was actually more leaning towards the wrong side, I would say. So we definitely have a population here that there's a lot of, I don't even like to say both sides because there's really only one side here, but there's a lot of, you know, opposing views here. So our union leadership and our employer leadership, they've really been getting hit hard from both sides.
And yes, and to piggyback off that, I feel like they've been silent through this. I don't feel like they're doing enough to protect teachers who are outspoken about the genocide that's happening. I've been disappointed in their lack of using their power in this. It's been disappointing.
I'll add to that, actually, that we do have over 5 teachers that are on administrative leave for their support on social media. And it's definitely unjust. We have been organizing locally also. We held a really big protest at our Board of Education and demanded that they reinstate the teachers and that they, you know, affirm our First Amendment rights, and we haven't seen much progress since, but we are still fighting locally too.
Yeah, I feel like we need to join the many unions that very early in this did the right thing as teachers' unions and called for a ceasefire. You know, we're Minneapolis, I'm tired today, Oregon, so many. It's actually embarrassing that we haven't.
Can you share with our listeners what drew you to want to be involved in the Palestinian solidarity work?
I can start with that. I've gotten asked that question a lot. And I always feel like we should be asking others why they aren't. I feel like it's so connected with everyone, you know, with the connections that the United States and Israel has, you know, with our tax money. Every day I go to work, my heart hurts that I'm funding this. I just feel like, how could I not be involved? It's just such a big issue, and it's connected with other issues all around the world. I mean, there's Congo and Haiti, and there's just so many. So it's just everything's connected. So
yeah, and just to piggy off what Dana said, very similar. You know, nobody is free until we are all free, and I think that's been made especially clear lately. And I've always kind of been outspoken, and I've always been fighting for the oppressed, because, you know, those are our kids. Even if they're adults at some point, you know, those are my students. Just because they're in another country, those are our collective kids. So I've always fought for them, and I always will.
Yeah.
And what do you say to people when they say this issue is about foreign policy and doesn't have anything to do with schools or teachers or education broadly?
I can start with that one. I say wherever my tax dollars are going is my business. Wherever children are suffering is my business. And it's really as simple as that.
I don't have anything to add. That's exactly what I would say. I don't like that question. I get asked, that's a great question to add to this, because I get asked that a lot, and I don't have anything to add to what Becca said. It's just, yeah.
Affects us all.
It does. Mm-hmm.
That captures it. So tell us what you can about local organizing. Have you had, and you talked a little bit about the educators who were targeted for political speech. Can you just tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so we had one teacher go out on leave very quickly after October 7th for having the line "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free" in her email signature. While that is a quote-unquote violation of MCPS policy to not have, again, quote-unquote political statements in our email signature, she is one of hundreds of people who have certain statements like that in their signature. So it was definitely clearly discrimination. And that was just the start of what I really think is like, I think a lot of teachers have been used as political pawns here. I think they are trying to make a major statement that we should be fearful and we should be silent. And it's really just done the opposite. We are gathering more and more teachers in our county to help us fight, and we are getting loud and causing a lot of internal chaos where we go. So we won't be silent, and as much as they want us to be, it's just not going to happen.
Yes, to add on to that, I was, when COVID happened, I really did try to get people involved in my school and further in, you know, doing what's right and, you know, making sure that we had the mask mandates. And I was very disappointed in how little teachers came out for that and wanted that and had time to advocate for that. And I've been very surprised through this that there are so many teachers who are willing to join these chats and to join these groups and to work within the union, you know, to get certain people off the Apple ballots and to make sure that we are not endorsing candidates that take PAC money. And we are just, I've just been very, it's made me feel more optimistic. I think it is because these groups have allowed me to kind of interact with teachers, not just from my county, but from outside of the state and from all around. And I feel like I have more optimism about our ability to really work together to make things happen. I mean, yesterday we were involved in that march from NEA, and we were just, and that night NEA made a statement, and you can go on their website and read it. It wasn't perfect. It was the minimum at this point in the game, but it is a step forward. And they did, you know, denounce what is happening right now. And so that's just seeing those little steps really mm-hmm. helped me feel optimistic about the future and about this going forward.
Yeah, well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And KBOO doesn't take corporate money for advertising. We rely on you, our listeners, for sustaining us financially. So please go to kboo.fm/give to donate. So you've now mentioned a little bit about you mentioned this march yesterday, but tell us about, there's a group called Educators for Palestine, Full Transparency. I'm part of that group. But talk about that group and what they've been up to the last few months.
Yeah, so Educators for Palestine is a group of educators from across the United States. We have been organizing for months. I joined in the group when our action for February 10th yesterday was already kind of in the works, but I hopped in and got very involved pretty quickly. We not only were planning for this very powerful day of action, but we also have people who are working on passing motions at, you know, NEA's rep assemblies, and people who are writing NBIs tirelessly, trying to make sure the language will, you know, not be ruled out of order. So not only are we working externally to plan, you know, marches and rallies and demand that NEA start the process to rescind Biden's endorsement, but we are working internally as well, as, you know, we are all members of NEA. So we also have a lot of members from AFT. So having the two largest education unions coming together to really fight the status quo has been very powerful. This group, I think, has a lot of power, a lot of passion, a lot of dedication, and I'm really, really grateful to be a part of it.
I feel the same way. I feel this is my first, Becca kind of linked me in, and I've been watching and listening and observing and kind of thinking about the roles that I would be good in, I thought about that a lot yesterday as I watched all these amazing people come together and pull together such a great, oh, I get emotional, just such an event where so many people came together for a cause, kind of looking around and figuring out what I would be good at and my strengths. And I do really enjoy public speaking, so that's something I would like to explore. So it's just been a great opportunity to be part of such a strong group with such great people, and to be able to learn from them as someone who's new to this. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to echo that it is emotional. It does make me emotional too, to think about yesterday, how, you know, we started at AFT and marched to APAC and then marched to NEA, had a whole rally. And it was very powerful and moving. And I've gotten a lot of feedback already from just friends who were there who said that it was very intimate and personal, and that they felt very moved and that they learned a lot. And it did make me reflect on the fact that this is a bunch of teachers who planned this. So of course education was involved. Of course people learned things from our speeches. So just watching Dana get, you know, emotional over discussing it, I want to second that, because it's so powerful and so moving.
Was there anything in particular that you were hoping to achieve from yesterday?
I think that we were hoping to achieve a lot of different things, but I think ultimately showing our power and being visible, and showing NEA and really DC and just everybody who will hopefully see some of our footage, that we are serious and that we are going to fight this. And, you know, we care about where our endorsements are going. We care about what's happening everywhere, and that we just want to make sure we're visible and that people don't expect us to, you know, just be like, oh, okay, never mind, we'll just be quiet. We're going to fight this. I also know there were some motions brought to the floor at their meeting. And even though I think several were defeated, I know that the motion to pass the ceasefire bill was passed. And again, that's the power of our collective action. That's the power of our organizing together. So very proud of us.
Yes, I think one of the things that I thought about a lot yesterday was just how many people feel like their voice as one person, or even their voice as part of a small group, they don't feel like they are powerful. I even heard that from one of the board members walking in the building as we were there was a scene set up you know, we had a dead teacher and a school scene set up so that the board members, as they had to walk in, had to see that, and they had to step over, you know, the dead teacher, and they had to hear us, you know, talk to them about how they could use their voice and how they're powerful and how, you know, that's important. And one of them said, you know, I'm just one person. There's nothing I can do. And that stuck with me. One of the things that stuck with me was just that so many people feel that. And at one time I felt that way, and that's, we proved yesterday that that's not true. I mean, it is a small step, but it is a step forward. And even seeing that there were board members that came out during their lunchtime to stand with us and to listen to the speeches was very powerful. Listening to a student speak, her name was Sky, and she spoke, she did a very powerful speech from the point of view of a student. I believe she's a junior, don't quote me, but she's just a young student, and she just gave me so much hope. Her speech was very powerful. So it's just, we do have a voice, even as just one person.
So people are so afraid of Trump being reelected. There's a lot of push of, you know, voting with that in mind rather than maybe your political convictions. So how do you respond when all their objections to pushing Biden are about being fearful of helping Trump win?
Well, I can start with that one. I get that one a lot. So I've definitely had to think about my response to that a lot. And as someone who just 6 months ago proudly would wear a bright blue, vote blue, no matter who hat, with righteous audacity, I feel like I can speak to that. Because I really did. I was somebody who would have said that 6 months ago, before going through this journey of learning so many things. I would say it doesn't matter if you really look into the things Biden has done during his presidency. you really will see. Just a Google search, you will see that there is no difference really between the two parties. And that's a huge problem here. There's no democracy, really. You know, I feel that there's no difference. We're not really safe under either. And I just, to that, I also follow the voices of people of the global majority, and I listen to what they are saying, and they are telling me that it doesn't matter. They don't feel safe either way. And they've been telling us that for a very long time, and I'm very guilty of not understanding what was really meant by, you know, white liberalism, right? You know, the white liberal, and how much damage we can do. So I just, to that question, I say it doesn't matter. Do some research. That's what I always tell them. Give them some book recommendations. Just go do some research, because you'll find that it doesn't matter. Go talk to some people that aren't your skin color. See what they have to say. See what the Palestinian people have to say. Listen to their voice. You know, they'll tell you. So that's what I have to say to that.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. And I always like to say to people, like, this isn't about Trump. This is about Biden. So it has everything to do with pressuring Biden to do the right thing and the bare minimum, which is calling for a ceasefire. And if he doesn't do that, he's gonna lose because of him, not because of us. So if he wants to win, he needs to make sure that people wanna vote for him, not because they don't wanna vote for Trump, but because they wanna vote for him. I feel like a lot of times people think that it's our fault, you know, if Trump wins, but again, you know, I feel like it's every 4 years, like, oh, just four more years to save democracy, and then we'll be okay. 4 more years. But if you have to vote for only one human being in order to save democracy, then democracy is already dead. So, you know, NEA has the power to pressure Biden by rescinding their endorsement. And Biden needs our endorsement. So without it, hopefully he can feel pressured to do at least the beginnings of the right thing, if he has any hope of, you know, winning over people's votes.
So we are almost out of time. It's very close. And so maybe just a quick response from both of you. What's next? What do you hope to accomplish in the next few months?
So I think for me, my thoughts are that we will continue this fight. Our group chat is already still like in motion. We're still talking about next steps. I think we have a lot to do locally, statewide, and nationally. And I trust that as a group and as a collective, we are going to keep making noise and spreading awareness as we do as educators, and hopefully get as many people to normalize the idea that what's going on is horrific and wrong and we deserve better. So we're gonna keep fighting. Whatever that looks like, we're gonna keep on fighting.
Absolutely. For me, it's all of those things, but also continuing to learn, because I'm new at this and I'm not going to be able to use that excuse for very long. So I'm going to need to continue to learn the ins and outs of the union, what all these things mean, you know, what emotion means and what, you know, I'm just going to have to continue to learn all of that. And a friend just said, earlier today, actually, these are just the first steps. You know, a ceasefire is just the very, very first steps. I mean, we're going to need to continue to use our voices to uplift not just the Palestinian people, but working class people all over, and help empower them to use their voices to make changes, because this is not going in the right direction. It really is not going in the right direction, and it's scary. I've been kind of thinking lately about my kids' futures and as working class citizens and how I can use my voice to help make their future better. I mean, I have a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old, so it's just scary. So moving forward, just continuing to learn and use our voices and uplift the voices that matter.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.